Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 87. My name is John. In my shoes, a walking sleep. In my youth, I pray to keep. Heaven sent hell away. No one sings like you anymore. A few years ago, after a night of karaoke, a few of us closed down the bar and then headed out to an all-night Mexican food restaurant to top off all the alcohol consumed with a healthy dose of tacos and gorditas. It was a little after 3 in the morning. There were people like me at the table who maybe had an hour left before we would need to sleep, while the other true night owls would still be around for the sunrise. We got our orders, chatting away as we ate. But since we were all karaoke singers, eventually the discussion came back around to music. We discussed some of the songs we sang that night and some of the songs we wished we had the vocal talents to sing. Near the end of the meal, as the cheese finished coagulating on top of the now cold nachos, someone asked which singer each of us most wished we could sing like. How difficult a question is that? Just so you understand, I love karaoke, but I'm not that great of a singer. I'm good at the songs I'm good at. In other words, I have songs I know I can sing, songs that are in my wheelhouse. But there were some great singers at that table, so I felt a little out of my league. Also, everyone has their genres, and each genre has some legendary singers that anyone would kill to emulate. My genre is rock. Now, there are a lot of great choices out there just in that genre. I went through an oldies phase in my high school years. And if I had been asked that question back then, I would have probably said Otis Redding or Roy Orbison. I mean, come on, the soulfulness of Redding's voice or the range and power of Orbison's? Either of them would still be excellent choices, and don't get me wrong, I'd love to sing like either of them. But I had a different answer that night. As awestruck as I am at Otis and Roy, coming from the entirety of rock and roll's history, from the dance of the 50s, the protest of the 60s, the funk of the 70s, the party of the 80s, the grunge of the 90s, from Bill Haley and the Comets to today, wanting a voice that could encompass and do justice to all of those eras, there's one singer whose talent I genuinely envied. So that late night, when I was asked which singer I most wanted to be able to sing like, my answer was Chris Cornell. Excuse me. I woke up earlier this month, traipsed into the bathroom, and turned on the radio just as the morning reporter started the story of Cornell's death. My heart just sank. I've been spending a lot of time with my Soundgarden playlist. But of course, he had other great songs with Audioslave and as a solo artist. If you haven't heard it, I highly recommend his version of Billie Jean. We now know his death has been ruled a suicide, but members of his family are questioning that, or at least questioning whether or not the medication he was taking could have influenced his state of mind. regardless as to how it happened. The music world has lost an amazing talent. I highly recommend an article titled "It's Not What You Think," written by a gentleman named Rich Larson on his page called The First 10 Words. It's an excellent article that touches on the history of grunge music and the loss of so many of the voices of that era, some early and some, as in the case with Cornell, more recent, but just as tragic. The article goes into the ethos of Generation X, how it has been perceived by its own members, and how many of the common words that describe Gen X are also the key to defining and solving its problems. Generation X has pretty much lived to our generic name in some respects. I hear tons of talk about millennials and baby boomers, but Generation X is pretty much the forgotten middle child of generations. Now, Mr. Larson's article brilliantly shines a spotlight on clinical depression. That alone is why I call it a must-read. But he also touches on the themes of Generation X: cynicism, angst, and loneliness. I try very hard to make it clear that I do not speak for libertarians. I consider myself a libertarian, and I voice my opinion as such, but I cannot and will not claim to speak for the group. Likewise, I'm not so arrogant to believe I speak for the entirety of Generation X. Instead, I just give my perspective as an individual who happens to be a member of that generation. Is it any wonder why we're the cynical generation? The generation before us took this world to the brink of nuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Later on, the media of the previous generation had us convinced that at some point in our childhood, the buffoon in the White House would accidentally press the button and launch nukes vaporizing half the planet. Generation Xers cynically believe there is no tomorrow, because that is the message we grew up on. But you bastards lied to us. There is a tomorrow. Those horrible people you convinced us would fire the missiles and end life as we know it did nothing of the sort. You are either completely wrong, or it was all a lie. And I'm pretty sure we can all figure out which it really is. So we had to keep waking up every day knowing we were duped by our elders. We grew into adulthood and tried to build lives for ourselves on the foundation that life is futile. But that's not all. And this isn't entirely on the baby boomers, because this falls just as they were coming into adulthood. But they certainly exacerbated the problems. See, there was a power struggle in the Middle East where the British and the United States governments staged a coup that overthrew the government of Iran. Even though there was plenty of other shit involved, that event eventually led to the Iranian hostage crisis, just as Gen Xers like me were in our childhood, but beginning to hear and understand the tense fragility of the world around us. This, of course, took us on a direct path to the Gulf War, 9/11, and eventually the never-ending War on Terror. No wonder Gen Xers are so nihilistic. And then we look at the millennials coming of age and can't help but wonder if they're nothing more than the generational equivalent of spoiled grandchildren. You can't say a damn thing that could hurt their feelings because their psyche seem to be so delicate. They're under the impression that they can force the silence of anyone who dares to express an idea outside of their programmed parameters. I'm pretty sure history will one day recognize Generation X as the last to achieve adulthood at the age of 18. Now, millennials can suckle at the teat of their parents' insurance for 8 entire years after reaching what is supposed to be legal age. And trust me, this is coming from a late bloomer who stayed way too fucking long at mommy and daddy's house. I have nothing but contempt for my youthful stupidity. I can't believe that children would want to stay that long under their parents and not want to go off on their own and strive for independence. The only saving grace about that stupid law that allows children to remain on parents' insurance until the age of 26 is that the same law is using them to pay for the health care of the aging baby boomers. And they haven't figured that out. I guess, given the fears instilled in us by the previous generation, I shouldn't be too hard on the millennials. After all, if you're so afraid to go out into the world, it makes sense to cower under Mother Hen's wing. You've seen the meme, if you're at all on social media. It also appears in letter form, depending on the website. It's a talk about nostalgia and how different things were growing up in the Baby Boomer and Generation X decades. Things like, when we were young, there were no locks on medicine cabinets or childproof lids. And if there were, my mom would ask me to open it for her because she couldn't. We rode our bikes down the street without helmets or any padding. We often rode in cars without seatbelts. Hell, some cars back then didn't have seatbelts. We rode in the back of a pickup truck down the highway. We drank from garden hoses. We ran off with friends for hours at a time, sometimes until twilight, without any adult supervision. We fell out of trees, fell off bicycles, scraped our knees and elbows. When we were younger, we played games like Cowboys and Indians or Space Aliens, where we simulated shooting each other. When we got older, we played tackle football with no pads out on the field for fun. You can't do those things anymore. If you do, you get in trouble. You get parents freaking out. When did we get so goddamn paranoid about every little fucking thing? For that matter, when did we get so goddamn litigious about every little fucking thing? They both seemed to grow together at the same time, didn't they? Someone decided some screw-up that happened to them or their child wasn't really their fault, so they sued. And they found the right jury in the right place at the right time to render a verdict in their favor for big money. And the result was a rampant paranoia for fear of lawsuits. Now everyone with a 2-bit claim lawyers up for a piece of the action. But to what end? You can't discipline. You can't criticize. You can't even raise your voice to children. Children these days are protected from outside environments like the original Declaration of Independence at the National Archives. It's sealed shut. So we have a generation raised in a bubble. Whether they were raised in a left-wing bubble, where CNN, NBC, and CBS were the standard of information, and big government liberalism was the standard of proper morality, or they were raised in a right-wing bubble where Fox News and the Wall Street Journal were the standard of information and big government conservatism was the standard of proper morality, they still grew up so encompassed by unwavering and supercilious dogma, none of them ever learned to respect the beliefs of others. And what does it come to? Well, here, is how you are expected to participate in the American political system. First, choose one of two sides. Second, publicly adhere to the morality of your side. Do whatever the fuck you want in private. Three, never, ever give any thought to the idea that your version of morality may be flawed. Four, never, ever doubt any decision of the rulers of your side. Five, if a public figure on your side fails to adhere to your established morality, support and defend that person to your last breath. 6. If a public figure on the other side fails to adhere to their established morality, demand that person's last breath. 7. Mock and or vilify anyone who does not fall into complete lockstep of the morality of your side. 8. If anyone dares to mock and or vilify you or your morality, castigate them until they are silent. If it is a public figure, seek ways to destroy their livelihood. 9. Support only those natural rights which apply to your morality. 10. Suppress all natural rights which do not adhere to your morality. 11. Meet all opposition with derision, contempt, anger, and hatred. And 12. Wonder incredulously why this country is falling apart. It's always the other side that's corrupt, isn't it? The other side that lies, and the other side that hurts people. Never could it be conceived that their side may be guilty too. God forbid anyone ever question the validity of the two sides of the big government duopoly. God forbid anyone ever decide both sides are wrong and elect to take a different path. And I use God forbid with all due irony, because both sides are so fervently entrenched in the self-righteousness of their cause that anyone who deigns to suggest they are anything less than holy in their policies are heretics. I spoke so much about this last podcast, I'll just touch on the highlights, but I can't believe Al Gore and the climate change theocrats. If he uses more energy than anyone in his state and doesn't bother to use so-called environmentally friendly sources of power until he is called out publicly for it, I can't believe that he believes what he preaches. The same goes for all the alarmists who tell me I have to shrink my carbon footprint, who were then flown in their private jets to a remote Pacific island for a climate change meeting. Yet, no one on the left questions their actions, and if you try to question it, you're a denier, who some leftists think should be jailed. Trump is a corporatist. He's a big business supporter who wants the game rigged in his favor. He knows the gray areas of law and is willing to live in those gray areas to achieve what he wants, despite the consequences to the rights of others. That is how he lives his life, and that is how he should be expected to act as president. But once he became the Republican nominee, most people who had been against him on the American political right dropped everything to support him. They know he's not good for the country, but their only reason for voting for him is because he wasn't Hillary. He wasn't the other side. Of course, vice versa can be said for much of the left as well. I'm looking at you, Bernie. From the outside looking in, it's hard to conceive of such duplicity. It's even more difficult to see it in family, friends, and acquaintances who are blatantly oblivious to their own duplicity. I've lost count how many times I've read a post from someone I know on Facebook talking about how horrible it is that the Republicans want to prevent gay marriage. They rightly proclaim that if two consenting adults want to enter into a private contract where they share their lives together, then they should be allowed to do so. God damn it, you gotta let people have their freedom to do as they please with their lives. But what happens when a private business owner exercises his or her natural right to conduct business on their terms and not bake a cake for a gay wedding? Those same self-righteous people championing the rights for one group of individuals venomously demand the rights of another group be taken away by the nanny state. But it doesn't end there, no. They demand speech restrictions on anyone who supports such businesses. They also demand that churches be taxed. The separation of church and state only applies when it's to their advantage. I've made my position clear. To deny any wedding cake to a gay couple is anti-capitalist and a foolish business practice. But in America, you have the right to conduct your business that way, if that's how you wish. Let the marketplace decide the fate of your business if that's how you wish to operate. That's not good enough for the leftists, who, ironically, want to have their cake and eat it too. I've lost count how many times I've read a post from someone I know on Facebook talking about how horrible it is that Democrats just want to tax and spin this country into oblivion. They rightly proclaim that we are overly taxed as a nation and that money is funneled to political projects, after a healthy cut is taken to pay for the bureaucracy, and often wasted and lost. God damn it, why do you have to force people to surrender some of their earnings for your pork barrel projects that don't benefit the taxpayer? But what happens when you suggest that the military-industrial complex doesn't need the massive amount of funding it has received? The same self-righteous people clamoring for cutting taxes refuse to cut spending for the biggest pet project of all. Oh, but this is national defense! No, it's national offense. We need to defend this nation, not have thousands of our citizens off hunting dragons. We don't need dozens of American military bases in other nations. We don't need to go out and start aggressions against other nations. We don't need to be performing military actions in countries who are supposed to be our allies without their knowledge or permission. That's not good enough for the right-leaning people who think that an endless war is equal to freedom. All the left seems to know how to do is berate anyone who fails their moral litmus test. All the right seems to know how to do is berate anyone who fails their moral litmus test. Is it any wonder the people of this nation are becoming less and less civil to each other? I started out by taking on the generation before me and the generation after me. I hope you realize I'm not about to limit the blame to only them. Of course, Generation X is as much to blame as millennials, baby boomers, the World War II generation, and everyone before. The generations that come after millennials will carry the blame as well. Each will have to shoulder the responsibility because each has perpetuated the failures of the previous generation. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. We have not yet learned that we are drifting further and further away from the proclaimed goal set forth by this nation to have its citizens be free. So long as we continue to buy into the two-party duopoly that controls the political halls of this nation, we will continue to see our freedoms taken from us, placed under control of the bureaucracy, and ransomed back to us in the form of licensing and taxation. So long as we continue to allow corporations to influence laws that destroy competition and give unfair advantages to big business under the false sense of security of regulation and public safety, we will continue to see cronyism destroy our economy. So long as we continue to believe that force will make the world a better place, we will continue to lose the lives of people we love. Our fathers, our mothers, our sons, our daughters, our brothers, our sisters. To the war machine that has only strengthened the resolve of people who should never have been our enemies. Nor will our rights to privacy, probable cause, or protection from warrantless seizures be safe so long as we believe police have the right to interfere in the lives of people for what is currently considered victimless crime. So long as we continue to allow ourselves to be divided by race, gender, beliefs, and any other schism they can think of, we will only see the seeds of hatred and wrath come to fruition. We should be respecting each other's beliefs, even when we disagree. We should defend each other's rights, even when we disagree. If you work to have other people's rights taken away, what case do you have when your rights could be taken? I look around these days and I wonder if it's already too late. Nearly every aspect of our life is taxed and regulated. Our economic system looks more like national socialism than free market capitalism. So many people seem to take glee in verbally abusing people just because they dare to believe something different. The people who want to build bridges to end the hatred are ignored by the masses. The media perpetuates the divisiveness. The government grows its power off the political hatred. Maybe that nihilism that was sung about by Chris Cornell and his peers as part of Generation X needs to kick in for people like me. Maybe I should stop fighting because the battle is already lost. Now, as Paul Harvey used to say, listen with both ears. I don't know where you are in the seasons of your life right now, but as for me, I feel like I fell on black days. I've had enough of both sides of the American political aisle striking their Jesus Christ pose for the media, claiming their loud love for my rights, while behind the scenes they have their hands all over my liberties. Expecting me to sacrifice my rights while they show me how to live. The day I finally understood what it means to be yourself, the day I tried to live, I was told no by the powers that be. Instead, I'm forced to sacrifice part of myself, part of my well-being. I'm told my individuality must take a back seat to the hive of society, sucked into their black hole sun. According to big government, we all bleed together, and my pursuit of happiness must be outshined by catering to the desires of others. Their wants are a burden in my hand. I have to sacrifice my wave and get on the snake of responsibility to my fellow man. Now, instead of enjoying a flower growing in the springtime sun, I'm locked in a rusty cage hanging from a pretty noose. The greed of the takers in society has turned my heart like a stone. I have nothing to say to the moochers. I just want to hold close to me those who I love. And as far as I'm concerned, all those fears the baby boomers instilled in me can come true, and mercifully, someone will blow up the outside world. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.